We're very pleased to yet again be hosting the J.M. Smucker Company at our Global Consumer Staples Conference. When we initiated coverage on Smucker 6 years ago with a $60 price target, our model embedded $4.5 billion in sales and $985 million in EBITDA. We're forecasting today $7.6 billion in sales and $1.7 billion in EBITDA. Clearly, a lot has changed in 6 years, not the least of which has been Smucker's entry into the pet food category last year with its acquisition of Big Heart Pet Brands. As Smucker integrates this acquisition, so too has it been working to further enhance its margin structure via a robust synergy and cost savings program. Meanwhile, the company is approaching 3x leverage, a level at which it has previously indicated it would continue to reevaluate capital deployment. So the Smucker story continues to evolve, and here today to discuss all of this with us is Mark Smucker, President and CEO. With that, I'll pass it over to Mark. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Andrew. Good afternoon. I think this is probably the only time that we've ever traveled outside of the state of Ohio, and the weather there was actually better than where we were going. So thank you, first of all, for the introduction, Andrew, and for Barclays for having us. We are very pleased to have the opportunity to be here. And quite frankly, I'm honored to be speaking at this conference for the first time as the CEO of the Smucker Company. As you know, certain information we will provide today is forward-looking based on current views and assumptions. Additionally, the company uses non-GAAP results for purposes of evaluating performance internally. Details for both of these items can be found within today's presentation, available on our investor relations website. We will cover several key topics today. First, I'll review our strategic vision and how that has evolved over the past year. Second, we'll highlight key strengths of the business and our confidence to deliver results by focusing on our strategy. Third, we'll provide more color around our solid first quarter results. Fourth, I'll share with you specific areas of focus that will ensure we continue to execute with excellence in the near term while building enhanced capabilities that will help drive growth long term. And finally, Mark Belgia will provide a financial update, including cost savings plans, uses of cash, and acquisition strategy. Also here today with me are Steve Oakland, Vice Chair and President, U.S. Food and Beverage, along with Barry Dunaway, President of Pet Food and Pet Snacks, who will both be joining us for the breakout session that will follow our presentation. For the past 15 years, our company has delivered tremendous growth by focusing on a strategy of leading brands in the center of the store in North America. Through a combination of acquisitions, innovation, and category growth, we have built a balanced portfolio consisting of three growth platforms: coffee, consumer foods, and pet foods and snacks. Number one and leading brands remain foundational to our strategy, but we also recognize that the consumer, through digital and social media, wields more influence than in the past, and authentic emerging brands also play an important role in the market. Our evolved strategic vision reflects this consumer shift and highlights the need to strike the right balance between number one brands and smaller on-trend brands. Let me provide a few examples of how we are leveraging our brands against this strategy. First, we have proven that leading brands like Jif, Smucker's, and Milk-Bone can extend beyond their historical positioning and footprint. In all three cases, these brands have had success pushing out against our snacking strategy as well as better-for-you offerings. Whether in Jif bars, Jif to go, or Smucker's Uncrustable sandwiches, we have seen strong growth in each of these snacking platforms. Both Smucker's and Jif have also seen solid growth with their natural offerings, utilizing simpler ingredients, while Milk-Bone brushing chews promote canine dental health. Although it is too early to share specifics, We also have plans to extend the Folgers brand with new innovation. We are also pleased to be executing with our smaller emerging brands, whether in the growth of Cafe Bustelo, Sahale Snacks, True Roots Ancient Grains, or Santa Cruz Organic Offerings. Our execution against our strategy in these areas is also paying dividends. Turning to our first quarter results, we were pleased with our adjusted earnings per share grew 16% over the prior year and exceeded expectations. While a portion of this outperformance was timing related and will impact the second quarter, we remain confident in achieving our full year earnings guidance. In fact, we expect earnings to be in the mid to high end of our EPS range of $7.60 to $7.75. Net sales were down 5%, excluding the impact of divestitures and foreign exchange. A sales decline was anticipated, primarily due to lower price realization, mostly in coffee. We also lapped initial launch shipments related to prior year distribution gains for Dunkin' Donuts K-Cups and Natural Balance dog food. Lower mainstream pet food sales also contributed. Across our portfolio, however, our market share growth in a number of these key categories is a testament to the strength of our brands. We did see ongoing contributions from innovation, including continued support of new products introduced in 2016. In addition, our coffee business continued to benefit from effective pricing strategies and its strong product portfolio. Across all businesses, we have strong brands that are beloved by our consumers, supported by a well-respected team with a proven ability to execute. Specific to pet food, we remain enthusiastic about this business and its strong brands. Given the growing pet population and the trends towards humanization and premiumization, as with our legacy food and beverage categories, we look to compete in all segments of the pet food category up and down the value scale and are excited about our opportunities in each area. Let me highlight a few current initiatives as I discuss the three components of our pet food business: pet snacks, mainstream food, and premium pet brands. Led by Milk-Bone, we have a great roster of pet snacks brands and are the market leader in this space, which we expect to be one of the key drivers of growth for our company over the long term. In dog snacks, we lead with a $40 share, with retail sales for our brands up 6% for the latest 52-week period. In cat treats, our brands have historically had limited offerings, but we are aggressively pursuing this white space. In the first year on the market, Meow Mix Irresistibles quickly increased our dollar share to 5% in the smaller but fast-growing cat snacks category. And we recently added to this product line with the introduction of Meow Mix Brushing Bites. Turning to mainstream pet food, we are well positioned as the number two participant in the cat food space. Meow Mix is a strong and versatile brand, and while currently in a competitive market, we remain confident in our ability to grow the brand. Last month, we debuted a new television advertising campaign. In addition, with the recent launch of Meow Mix Bistro, we are optimistic about our cat food business. For mainstream dog food, the challenges for Kibbles and Bits have been partially driven by category-wide deflation, as lower input costs are being passed through by manufacturers. To help protect share, we are responding with a number of tactical moves, including bonus bags and introducing new packaging and improved brand messaging, with these actions being well received by our key retailers. Product innovation will also play a role in repositioning the brand to its heritage strength, taste, and enjoyment. Strong execution on basic blocking and tackling, such as managing price gaps, distribution, and merchandising, is foundational to our company and why, over time, we have been successful in competing and growing in mature categories. With the growth of premium offerings in the grocery and mass market channel, an area where we don't currently compete, we see this as a clear white space opportunity for our pet portfolio. We are making progress in this area and have plans to execute an entry strategy later this fiscal year. Lastly, our premium pet business is led by the Natural Balance brand, which benefited from distribution gains at a major pet specialty retailer last year. As we lapped the prior year pipeline fill, reported sales for Natural Balance were down in the first quarter. Yet, despite this and the slightly slower growth in the overall pet superstore channel, we expect low single-digit growth for Natural Balance and our overall premium business on a full-year basis. This is supported by the first national advertising campaign for Natural Balance, which will launch later this quarter. In addition, we continue to grow the Natural Balance brand at a double-digit rate in e-commerce as we benefit from recently taking the business direct with the largest retailer in this channel. We also expect growth from more recent distribution expansion in the farm and feed and military channels. Let me wrap up this commentary by reiterating our commitment to the pet food business, which continues to deliver profit growth and strong cash flow. Overall, pet food and snacks is a fantastic category, and more importantly, we are enthusiastic about our brands and the opportunities in front of them. Let's now take a step back and discuss strategic areas of focus across the broader organization for fiscal 2017. We have a long-standing philosophy to share and continually reinforce our strategy with every employee. We firmly believe that the highest performance is achieved when employees have clearly defined objectives that align with our strategic priorities. To that end, we have communicated to all employees the mission, execute today, build for tomorrow. Specifically, we noted four priorities for this fiscal 2017 where we must execute with excellence: nurturing our culture, delivering the business, building and enhancing existing capabilities, both new and existing, and prioritizing our resources for our key growth drivers. Expanding on each of these areas, management, continuity, and family leadership has been critical in maintaining our unique culture. Within my leadership team, the years of experience at Smucker span from 1 to 33 years, with an average tenure of 19 years. This mix leverages long-term Smucker experience balanced with new perspectives gained from knowledge across the CPG industry and new ideas to support continuous growth. Our culture manifests itself in a number of ways. One key area is the strong relationships we maintain with all of our constituents, including our customers. As the eighth largest shelf-stable food and beverage manufacturer within the $252 billion U.S. center-of-the-store footprint, we are an important supplier, and we receive high marks from retailers for our consistency, transparency, and fairness in how we conduct business. They appreciate our long-term perspective and focus on profitably growing categories, which, in turn, benefits our brands and business. As one example, we are leveraging our leadership in the pet category to help retailers reinvent their pet aisle, consistent with the growth in demand for snacking and wellness products. Delivering the business begins with our consumer-centric vision, which highlights the role of our trusted brands in fueling growth as we look to engage, delight, and inspire consumers in today's environment. We are proud that consumers trust our brands. At least one of our products can be found in 93% of all U.S. households today. We continue to adapt to the evolving consumer landscape to ensure that our brands and products remain the preferred choice across multiple generations. This is the driving force behind our growing focus and presence in two areas that are increasingly on trend with consumers: the natural and organic space and snacking. While I'll expand on snacking in a few minutes, let me briefly touch on our natural and organic platform, which we anticipate will deliver net sales of approximately $350 million in the current year. This will result in an annualized growth rate of 9% since 2012. These products span a number of categories, including natural varieties of peanut butter and fruit spreads, our long history of leadership in natural and organic beverages, and an expanding presence in ancient grains through the True Roots brand. An integral part of delivering the business is a disciplined focus on achieving our synergy and cost savings objectives. We have clear line of sight to achieve the $200 million in acquisition-related synergies targeted by the end of 2018, including potential upside to the $100 million in incremental synergies projected for this year. We also continue to target an additional $50 million of annual cost savings from company-wide initiatives over the next few years. Ultimately, delivering the business provides the fuel to invest in the two remaining 2017 priorities: enhancing capabilities and focusing resources. We have a long history of industry leadership built upon meaningful partnerships and best-in-class capabilities. With a continuous improvement mindset, we are committed to building new capabilities and enhancing existing ones to ensure we are properly focused on areas such as innovation, consumer insights, analytics, connected commerce, digital marketing, and trade optimization. Expanding on this last point, we are further building capabilities in the area of revenue and trade management. As we analyze all of our programs, we are asking, is there a better way to partner with our customers? We think in many cases there is. With the application of customer and program-specific analytics, we will focus initially on reallocating dollars to programs that generate faster top-line growth for both us and our retail partners. The fourth and final topic is prioritizing our resources. While all our brands have roles to play in our portfolio, we are placing a particular emphasis in four areas where we can achieve faster and sustainable long-term growth: the coffee and pet snacks categories, as well as leveraging and growing our Smucker's and Jif brands. Allocating resources accordingly will allow us to capitalize on the opportunities for these brands and categories. While I spoke to pet snacks earlier, let me highlight a few current activities in the other three areas. Within coffee, we are focused on expanding our North American leadership through marketing, innovation, and reaching new consumers. In fiscal 2016, coffee net sales totaled $2.6 billion across the entire company, led by our three primary coffee brands, Folgers, Dunkin' Donuts, and Cafe Bustelo. Improved price points on Folgers roast and ground offerings have provided impressive results. For the latest 52-week period, our overall dollar share of mainstream coffee increased 2 points to 55%. As we move ahead, we remain committed to innovating and increasing loyalty to the brand, particularly with millennial consumers. This generation finds authenticity appealing, and a 166-year-old quality American product like Folgers is certainly authentic. Recent activities include introducing our new Folgers Coffee House blend, providing consumers a bolder brew. With the Dunkin' Donuts brand, we enjoyed great success with last year's introduction of Dunkin' Donuts K-Cups, which IRI named as one of the top product launches of the year. Dunkin' K-Cups generated net sales of approximately $210 million in fiscal 2016, bringing our total K-Cup portfolio to nearly $500 million. With a recent packaging redesign, the introduction of two new flavors, and increased marketing support, we do anticipate 2017 sales for Dunkin' K-Cups will match the strong first-year performance, despite lapping the pipeline fill. We are also encouraged by the recent volume trends for Dunkin' bagged coffee as price gaps to key competition continue to improve. The growth of the Smucker's brand remains another key priority. In 2016, the brand achieved net sales of nearly $775 million across all categories and business areas. What may be surprising is that less than half of these sales were derived from the retail fruit spreads category. Fruit spreads remains a solid category with overall sales growth of nearly 2% this past year, and we continue to gain market share with authentic innovation, such as our recently introduced Smucker's Fruit and Honey product line. To achieve our growth objectives for this brand, we continue to leverage products outside this category, the strongest example being Smucker's Uncrustables frozen sandwiches. In 2000, the product line was generating approximately $10 million in annual sales. Repositioning the product under the Smucker's brand and significantly investing in capacity and production capabilities have been critical to growing it into a $200 million business. With current household penetration at only 7%, we continue to invest in capacity to meet expected future demand. As always, we'll have Uncrustables available in the back of the room following the presentation, so please make sure to grab one. Similar to Smucker's, we are growing the Jif brand inside and out of its core category. With 2016 net sales of approximately $620 million, Jif remains the third largest brand in our overall portfolio. When we acquired the brand, the peanut butter category primarily consisted of creamy and crunchy varieties in a jar. Since then, we have significantly grown and transformed the category to include new varieties, flavors, and convenience options, leveraging the strong Jif brand equity and innovation. As I mentioned earlier, we continue to expand the brand outside the peanut butter category, with a particular focus on opportunities within snacking. Building on our previous success with Jif To Go and Dippers, last year we introduced Jif Snack Bars as we entered the $5.5 billion and growing snack bar category, and we also launched Jif Peanut Powder. Jif, along with Smucker's Uncrustables, and more recently the addition of Sahale Snacks, have all been key components of our initiative to build a company-wide snacking platform. Across all of our consumer brands, products that we categorize as snacking are expected to account for nearly $340 million in net sales in 2017. Increasing at an annualized growth rate of 17% since 2012. We look forward to sharing more news about our snacks pipeline as we move ahead. Let me conclude my comments by reiterating just a couple key messages. We are on track to deliver our earnings and cash flow projections for 2017 while at the same time expanding our capabilities for future growth. In addition, we are confident in our long-term strategy and the ability of our talented employees to execute that strategy, all of which is supported by a strong brand portfolio. Thanks again for having us. I'm going to turn it over to Mark for a financial update.
Thank you, Mark. Good afternoon, everyone. My comments today will be organized as follows. First, a brief recap of Q1 results and our full year guidance, and then an update on synergies and our cost savings initiatives. And finally, I'll conclude with a few comments on cash and leverage, including current thoughts on M&A. To briefly ground everyone, let me begin with a quick overview of our first quarter results announced 2 weeks ago. As Mark noted, comparable net sales decreased 5% from the prior year, with a decline largely anticipated. Adjusted operating income increased 2% as the lower net sales were more than offset by a decrease in commodity costs and incremental synergies. Additionally, a more normalized tax rate as compared to the previous year and a decrease in shares led to adjusted earnings per share growth of 16% to $1.86. As highlighted during our earnings call, we expect comparable sales to be flat to down 1% compared to 2016, but maintained our adjusted earnings per share range of $7.60-$7.75. After exceeding our expectations in the first quarter and given a more favorable input cost outlook for our consumer foods, some potential upside to our synergy forecast, and a lower full-year tax rate, we now have a bias toward the middle to high end of that range. For our outlook by segment, while we expect U.S. retail coffee net sales to decline for the full year due to lower pricing, the largest impact was in the first quarter, as we have now lapped last year's 6% list price decrease. However, the more recent 6% price decline taken in May will continue to have an impact for the remainder of fiscal 2017. For the full year, we anticipate our recognized green coffee cost to be favorable and segment profit to be flat to slightly up compared to 2016. For U.S. retail consumer foods, we anticipate revenue and segment profit to decline due to the divested milk business. Excluding this divestiture, both metrics are expected to be up, with sales growth driven by the continued strong performance of the Smucker's and Jif brands, and segment profit further benefiting from favorable input costs. We project U.S. retail pet food sales to decline, reflecting lower pricing in mainstream dry dog food and slowing pet specialty channel growth. We continue to anticipate profit growth from incremental synergy realization. In international and food service business, revenue is expected to benefit from base business growth, but the effect of foreign exchange will likely temper reported results. In response to a number of questions we received from investors following the earnings call, we thought it would be helpful to frame in the relative size of the three components of our pet food business. Mainstream food is the largest, generating 47% of our total pet food sales in 2016 and a slightly greater percentage of segment profit. Nearly two-thirds, or $680 million of last year's mainstream sales, were in cat food. This is mostly comprised of Meow Mix, which is the largest brand in our pet food portfolio at around $400 million annual net sales, and the 9Lives brand, which is just over half that size. In addition, our smaller mainstream dog food business had net sales of approximately $390 million, of which $260 million related to the Kibbles 'n Bits brand, or about 12% of total pet revenue. Pet snacks represented approximately one-third, or $760 million of our U.S. retail pet food sales last year and generated an even greater percentage of segment profit, as they represent some of the highest margins in the company's overall portfolio. This business is led by the Milk-Bone brand, with nearly $360 million in annual net sales. Lastly, our premium pet brands generated nearly 20%, or $430 million of 2016 pet food sales, led by the Natural Balance brand with approximately $330 million in annual sales. These brands are sold exclusively in the pet specialty channel and online. On this topic, let me address one final question we've been receiving regarding the relative size of the pet superstores and the overall pet specialty channel. As shown on this slide, while pet superstores account for less than 20% of the 15,000 pet specialty outlets in the United States, they generate 60% of the nearly $8 billion in the annual dog and cat food sales in this overall channel. Let me now turn to our cost savings initiatives. As Mark referenced, achieving our synergy and cost-saving objectives is essential to meet our current financial targets and provide the fuel to invest in future growth. At Smucker, our longstanding commitment to ongoing productivity and cost discipline is reflected in a number of ways. Since 2010, we have closed or sold nine manufacturing facilities, not including our plans for three additional plant closures announced this past June. This has been accomplished by consolidating production into new or existing facilities and through the efficient utilization of our co-manufacturing partners. These optimization efforts in our supply chain have also extended to streamlining our warehousing and transportation networks, which resulted in the consolidation of distribution centers. Lastly, as we've acquired new brands and businesses over the year, our playbook has been to rapidly integrate administrative functions and systems in order to capitalize on best practices and cost efficiencies. While these are just a few examples, continuously challenging our cost structure has resulted in productivity metrics measured by sales and EBIT per employee that place us in the top tier within our peer group. Building on these efforts, we remain confident in achieving a synergy goal of $200 million related to the Big Heart acquisition. In the first year, we realized $37 million in synergies, as we have clear line of sight to reach the $100 million of incremental synergies targeted for this fiscal year. And while we typically speak in terms of realized synergies, if you evaluate it on a run rate basis, which reflects projects completed that will result in future realized savings, we've already reached a run rate of 85% of our 2018 target. As we've highlighted, in addition to the $200 million of synergies, we're targeting $50 million of incremental annual cost savings to be fully realized over the next few years. To achieve this, we are further optimizing our manufacturing footprint by closing three additional facilities over the next 15 months, with production being consolidated into existing operations. Also contributing to this cost savings targets will be the execution of an organizational redesign aimed at further optimizing corporate resources. Realizing these synergies and cost saving targets will be the primary focus in the near term, but over time we will continue to evaluate our supply chain and our overall cost structure for additional opportunities. Let me demonstrate how we anticipate all of this to translate into our P&L for fiscal 2017. While we expect to initially reinvest much of the $50 million cost savings in the growth opportunities Mark outlined, among others, we're committed to delivering the $200 million in synergies to the bottom line. This includes the incremental $100 million expected to be realized in fiscal 2017, of which approximately $25 million is projected to benefit gross profit. Coupled with the net impact of lower pricing and commodity costs, this is expected to result in adjusted gross profit margin exceeding 39% for the year. This continues our recent trend of gross margin expansion reflected in the 370 basis point improvement from 2012 to 2016. Conversely, while our employee productivity rates remain high and well above peer average, SD&A as a percent of sales has trended up over the past several years from 16.2% in 2012 to 19.3% this past year. In addition to the impact of deflation on the top line, a portion of this increase is attributable to a higher rate of marketing and advertising spend, including the addition of the pet food business, which has a historically greater marketing spend as a percent of sales. In addition, higher selling expense partially reflects licensing the costs associated with the Dunkin' Donut brand. Over this same time period, G&A as a percent of sales has grown 150 basis points from 5.2% to 6.7%. While this is partially due to increased R&D spending, higher administrative expenses were a key consideration in expanding our cost structure review beyond just acquisition-related synergies. This review culminated in the previously announced corporate organization redesign. Overall, we expect total synergy and cost savings opportunities to contribute to G&A as a percent of sales, decreasing 30 to 40 basis points in 2017, and further declines expected in 2018 and beyond. Let me close this overview of cost with a brief update on our commodity outlook and general coverage overview. As mentioned, we anticipate net commodity cost to be slightly favorable for the year, given our results to date, our current hedge position, and our market outlook. Looking at a number of our top raw materials, these commodities are mostly trading close to the five-year lows, and we anticipate the markets to remain relatively benign over the near term. Expanding on green coffee, while below the highs from the past several years, Arabica and Robusta coffee futures have increased 16% and 23% respectively since the beginning of the calendar year. However, we have good visibility into our cost structure for much of fiscal 2017, and continue to anticipate our recognized cost to be lower year over year. However, we remain confident in our ability to take price if it is warranted. Let me conclude with an update on cash and capital deployment. As we look out over the next few years, our cash allocation model remains unchanged. That is, roughly 25% of cash from operations will go towards CapEx. Approximately 30% to 35% will be allocated to dividends. And lastly, the remaining 40% to 45% will be towards debt repayment in order to meet our deleveraging objectives. In addition, we'll continue to deploy excess cash for opportunistic share repurchases as well as acquisitions. Let me briefly demonstrate how we're applying this model in fiscal 2017. With cash from operations estimated at $1.24 billion and CapEx at $240 million, we're targeting free cash flow at $1 billion. Based on our recent 12% increase in the dividend rate and the current number of shares outstanding, we anticipate dividend payments to approach $350 million this year. In addition, we estimate debt repayment of approximately $450 million, which will allow us to reach our 3.1 leverage target by the end of our fiscal year. Factoring all of this in would leave us with approximately $200 million of additional cash to further pay down debt, buy back shares, or apply to bolt-on acquisitions. And while large-scale transactions are less likely for us in the near term, M&A does remain an important component of our strategy. In the near term, we continue to evaluate acquisitions or ventures that support the growth platforms that Mark discussed in his presentation. Specifically, they may include opportunities to expand in the snacking arena, building on our previous acquisition of Sahali Snacks, or in the natural and organic products, such as our recent minority investment in Numi. And also, we believe there are a number of attractive assets in the coffee and pet areas, particularly as we look to capitalize on premiumization trends in both of these categories. While these are just a few examples, we remain committed to our disciplined approach to transactions, ensuring that the target is a strategic fit for the long-term growth of the company. Our M&A track record reflects the successes we've achieved in pushing out on this lever, and we expect acquisitions will continue to play a key role in our future growth. With that, I would like to conclude our formal comments by reiterating our confidence in the strategy of our company. As Mark indicated, we're executing on our plans to improve top-line trends while at the same time investing in our capabilities to enhance future growth. We remain committed to achieving our synergy, cost savings, and working capital targets, and are confident in realizing solid earnings growth and free cash flow this fiscal year and beyond. For all these reasons, and as we always like to say, we clearly believe the best is yet to come. We thank you for your time, and I think we may have time for a question or two. Thank you.
Thank you. One or two from me. I'll kick it off. I guess, Mark and Barry, in thinking about your coming entry into mass premium within pet, it seems like you're still considering a number of different possible ways to enter that subspace. Can you just talk about some of the key considerations between a buy versus build versus kind of partner strategy when you think about entering into that subspace? And then a little bit about what the competitive environment looks like, specifically in mass premium as well.
Why don't I start, and then Barry can fill in any details that I miss. But a couple things. So on our call, we did talk about evaluating a number of options. We've narrowed those down significantly, and we basically are pursuing basically one alternative, and we feel very good about that. So we've had some initial reads. We really can't share a whole lot right now, but over the next couple quarters, we should be able to share more. So I think we're feeling pretty confident there. Certainly, acquiring is an alternative, but it's not something that we can necessarily always control. So should that come into play, that could be an option as well.
And then I would just add, from a competitive standpoint, we're dealing with the same competitors in that segment as we are in the other dry dog segments. Respectable competitors. We also have Rachel Ray as a competitor who's just done a great job building a brand in that segment as well. But we'll look at investing for the long term to be competitive in that segment, just like we are in snacks and mainstream and cat. So once we make our long-term decision there, I'm confident we will be successful with our entry strategy.
I'm shifting over to coffee for a minute. I guess I'm curious about lessons learned from some of the volatile, you know, moves we've seen in green coffee over the past sort of 2 years or so. As we start to see green coffee prices move a little higher, you've got good visibility sort of closer in around your hedging strategy and such. But I guess what are the key lessons learned now that you've gotten those price points better aligned in the core roast and ground space? Volume has actually come back nicely as a result. Does does rising green coffee costs over time put some of those key price points at risk, or are there now, or was it just so anomalous what we saw over the last couple of years around green coffee that that's not as much of a concern moving forward?
Well, I'll start again. I think clearly there are lessons learned from 3 years ago or so, and there, depending on the segment, there seem to be certain thresholds. And I think 3 years ago, we talked about the $10 price point. Crossing that has, you know, is typically not a good thing. Given where we are now, and given the fact that coffee commodity costs, both Arabica and Robusta, have moved nominally and sort of gradually over the last, say, 2 years, has given us some renewed confidence, of course, in that. And then we've always said that we are able to price to recover. And so when you're not having a very anomaly, a wild anomaly in the coffee cost, generally speaking, we have been very disciplined about making sure that we can recover those costs.
I would add two things to that. I think one is, if you remember, there are two price declines since those high points. So I think to keep ourselves in the current pricing zones that we're at today, we could afford one price increase comfortably. So that makes us feel a lot better, frankly. But the other thing is, structurally, we changed the size of the container. And so some of those price points would have to change dramatically to get us back up to that $10 price point. So I think we've done one thing structurally, and I think there's some room in there. And I think our opinion on it is that there's plenty of coffee available. So we don't see that on the horizon.
Okay, good. I think we're out of time in here, so please join me in thanking Smucker for being here, and we'll take it to the breakout. Thank you.